welcome you to our service. As I mentioned earlier this morning in the service, I think I would be remiss before going on not to mention this week's Super Bowl. A lot of people are thinking about it. They're planning ahead. We have some Super Bowl parties going on here. And this matchup this week should be a great, great matchup between the Steelers and the Packers. And I was just wondering how you were thinking about that game. I'm wondering if somebody had any predictions about how that game would go down. I think the Packers have the best offense. I certainly believe the Steelers have the best defense. And just wondering what was your prediction for the game this week? Keith, what is your prediction for the game?
I thought the Saints would win.
You thought the Saints would? You mean the Packers and the Steelers aren't playing in the Super Bowl? Wow. That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. No, actually, I'm making a point with this. I got to thinking this week about all the predictions and the expectations people have for something that's going to happen in the future. It applies to sports, it applies to our lives. And so I looked up just one of many articles this week from one of the CBS sports prognosticators, and he was giving his prediction for the season this year in the NFL. And so I thought it would be interesting to see what he and what some others had to say. And it just so turns out that John Breach, who wrote this article, picked in the Super Bowl the Packers over the Steelers. All right? With the Packers beating the Falcons in the NFC Championship and the Steelers beating the Jaguars in the AFC Championship. So that's what should have happened. Right? We predict things based on how things ought to go. And sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong, aren't we? Now we know it's Los Angeles and we know it's the Patriots. And I'm going to make a prediction right now that I think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. All right, I'm not saying I necessarily like them better than Los Angeles, but my expectation is for the Patriots to beat Los Angeles in doing it by at least 10 points, just as I picked Alabama over Clemson easily in the national championship game. This is just a little illustration of how life is sometimes. Aren't our lives like that sometimes? We think it's going to go a certain way. We make plans. We look to the future. Maybe we're in high school and we have everything all lined up and we're going to go to this college or we're going to go to this school. We're going to do this, do that. We have it all planned out. And how many of us, those of us who can look back, say, for example, at our experience in high school in terms of what we thought might happen, in terms of what I expected to happen in my life or your life, and how many of us can say things turned out just the way we thought they'd turn out or we hoped they would turn out. When I was in high school, I certainly did not, even for a minute, even after my conversion to Christ late in my senior year in high school, I was not giving the idea of preaching much thought at all. And I know when Jeannie went to Lipscomb, and I was there at that time, that certainly Jeannie was not thinking a second about going there and marrying some preacher from Alabama. And I think I've told you the story before when she left, and I don't think Jeannie was super excited about going to Lipscomb. She was going, but, I mean, her heart wasn't completely in it, but I know that her heart was certainly not in the direction, I'm going to go to Lipscomb, and I'm going to find me a preacher to marry. In fact, her brother jokingly said when she left to go to college, oh, you'll probably go marry some preacher, to which she said, ain't no way, buddy, I'm going to do that. So things happen that we don't expect to happen. Life is that way. Carrie Newhouse has a book, and I'm not finished with it yet. I'm reading it. I've read about half of it. But the title of the book is called I Didn't See It Happening. I Didn't See It Coming is the title of the book. And the subtitle of that book is Overcoming the Seven Great Challenges That No One Expects, But Everyone Experiences. How many of us, when we're in high school, and I look at some of the high schoolers right over here right now, junior high, senior high, and how many of you are thinking right now as you're thinking about your future, you know, I plan on growing up, and I am so excited about the future, and I'm going to get really burned out on life. How many of you have like been thinking about that? All right, Justin, you're an exception to the rule for a lot of things. Or how many of us thought when we were in high school, when we were so idealistic and we're thinking about our future and what's going to be coming, how many of us were thinking, you know, in 20 or 30 years, I'm going to hit my 50s and I'm going to kind of become cynical about life and life's experiences. But it happens, doesn't it? The idealism, the hope, the dreams of youth, of the future, can sometimes cause us to look back with regret over expectations or hopes that never happened. But I don't want to become cynical, do you? I don't want to be burned out, do you? I want to have the same kind of energy and focus and excitement about life and about what God is calling me to do as I had 10 or 20 years ago. And I do believe, as we discuss this whole idea and how we apply these things to our own personal lives, I think we need to understand this kind of overarching idea that really is the big idea upon which this whole story in the life of Joseph is based, and that is this. God is sovereign over all. God is watching over all. He's not missing anything. And God continues and has been and will be working out his plans in the world and working out his plans in you. In you. Because, yes, I believe, based on what we read in the Bible and what is said not only about other people, but about promises that are made to us, that God has a plan for us. He has a plan for you and me. He had one for Joseph. And I understand sometimes when we start talking about these kinds of things, there's a little warning sign that pops up in our head that says, warning, warning, warning. I don't buy that. This whole idea, okay, maybe I buy it. Maybe I accept it for somebody like Joseph or Abraham or Ruth or those other big Bible characters who did a whole lot of very, very important things. But to talk to me personally about God working in my life and having a plan for me, it may just go in one ear and out the other. I'm not saying you might be thinking that God's not involved in some way, but to really be that involved in my life. He certainly had a plan for Joseph, and that's something that comes out in the 37th chapter of the book of Genesis. We're introduced to Joseph there. Joseph was his father's favorite. He was the one who was shown partiality by Jacob for several different reasons, but one of those being that he was the son of Rachel. And he was a one who was given gifts by his father. He was the one, you remember, who had the richly ornamented a robe. One translation there says a coat of many colors. And on top of that, it was absolutely clear that Jacob looked with partiality and favoritism towards Joseph, unlike with other brothers. So there was already some tension there in the family. And to top off all those matters, we find out that Joseph has the ability to have dreams. And a little bit later on in the story, we're introduced to his ability to be able to interpret those dreams. And so in Genesis 37, we're told in verse 5, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." And his brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. And then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. And this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars, they were bowing down to me." And when he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. I think about what his father thought about in terms of those dreams and what they might mean. Joseph's brothers aren't thinking about what those dreams might mean in theological or life event terms. They're just mad. And they're just getting more angry and more angry and more angry to the point, and you know the story here, that something very bad happens to Joseph a little bit later on. But it's clear God is showing him in this dream that he has a plan for him. And in the reading this morning that was done before I came up here, that kind of gives you the end of the story when the brothers are actually bowing down before Joseph, not even recognizing that it's Joseph. But some things happen between this dream and what happened later, right? And so as we begin this whole discussion about being a part of God's plans and being on that path to growing and discovering the will of God in our lives and how we apply that in our lives, I think we understand that that path is sometimes uncertain. That sometimes we hit a roadblock. That sometimes we find a detour sign along the way. That's one reason I love GPS so much. One of the greatest inventions ever invented. I understand the basics of the technology, but I don't have to understand all about why and how it works. I just know it works. And I love that Waze application especially. I like it better than Google Maps. Because with my Waze application, I can make the voice sound like some smart British woman as she speaks. And you know, I just love listening to that. But it's not just that. With the Waze application, you have a whole network of people who are using that app, and when they see a car on the side of the road or they see a policeman up ahead, they report it on their app, and then that goes out, and then it comes back, and everybody as they're driving can see that on their app. So as you're driving, you hear the lady say in her nice voice, "Policeman reported up ahead." So if you're speeding, which I don't do much, then you pay attention. Or the one I love is pothole ahead. I mean, seriously, our last trip, we were probably saved a flat tire by listening to this nice woman tell us there were potholes ahead in the road. It's nice. It is nice to know what's up ahead. And then you plug in the place where you're going. It'll tell you the estimated time of arrival. You can look at the directions. You're going to go up to that point. And you've got it all planned. And you have it all figured out, right? Not always. Mm-mm. Does the GPS say, you're getting ready to have an accident? Or, watch out, you're going to blow a tire. Or, your car is going to break down. See, some things you don't know. Now, for some of us, all three of those things can happen with three different cars in the same family on the same day. I'm not going to mention the family's name, but I will say the last name starts with do and the last part ends in gun, so you can kind of put that together. But there was an actual day in December that with three cars that they had access to, that all three of those things happened to all three cars on the same day in December. One of the cars broke down, had to be fixed. The second car, they're driving in it, they hit a pothole, they have a flat tire, and the topper on the cake was they had a fender bender later that day with someone who is a member of this church. I'm not making that up. So sometimes you don't know. Sometimes things are unsure, and that's why if I was going to talk about some takeaways here, one of those takeaways would be go ahead and make your plans. Go ahead and make your plans, but expect the unexpected. And that's remembering that even when we do make plans and we're seeking God's will and we're wanting to do the right thing, that there are many times, not that we make a decision to reboot or start over again. This series has a lot been talking about what we do when we make the decision to make a right change or to commit ourselves to new resolutions or to make the decision to give others those second chances. Those are decisions we make in a situation that is not necessarily the same as this. Sometimes the reboot is forced on us, and we don't have any choice. It's not always bad. Sometimes it's neutral. Paul in Romans 15, he talked there about at some point wanting to go to Spain, and I've heard scholars on both sides of that issue saying, yeah, he made it to Spain, others saying he didn't make it to Spain. I don't think that matters as much as whether you go to Spain or not. You know, that just may be a change in plans. Sometimes it's a really, really good thing, right? And Jeannie and I have been religiously turning in twice a day on HGTV and the DIY network. We've been putting in that entry for that big dream home up in Montana somewhere. We're 2 point something million dollars with a quarter million of cash on top of that. And so we're reminded, did you enter both places? And as I do that, I think, that ain't going to happen. I'm wasting all this time doing this, but what if it did happen? It does happen to people, doesn't it? Somebody's going to win that home. So sometimes it's that rich relative who passes away you had never heard of that left you $1 million, but that doesn't happen very often. But when we talk about having to reboot, I'm talking about, in this story, this idea of being blindsided and experiencing something that you don't expect to happen that is not necessarily good. So in the life of Joseph, what happens? He's dad's favorite. He's on top of the world. Things are looking good. And then he goes out to check on his brothers, and you know what happens, right? Most of the brothers, they want to kill him. But Reuben, his opinion rules the day. They decide not to kill their brother, but instead throw him in a cistern, throw him in a pit. And then they think about what to do. And then the plan they come up with is to sell him to a band of roving Ishmaelites. And just in terms of what they did as they traveled around, it may be similar to what we might conceive of what gypsies might do. But nonetheless, they bind him and sell him to those who are headed to Egypt. They put animal blood on his coat, go to dad, lie to dad, tell dad this story, break their father's heart, and then at least now they've gotten rid of Joseph. You know, you talk about being blindsided. Talk about being blindsided. But this brings me to a second takeaway from this story in terms of how we want to apply it in our own lives, and that is this. Whatever the circumstances, we need to bloom where we're planted in the sense that we are not powerless in those circumstances where we feel we don't have choices and options. Joseph certainly had options and choices, not in everything, but he did have choices. And so in the story, God is blessing him, he is trusting in God, and he winds up at the home of a man named Potiphar, who is in charge of the guard. He has a very important position, and eventually he comes to the position of being the chief in that home, ruling everything else. Things are going well, and then all of a sudden we have another reboot in the story, and that's Potiphar's wife. And we know that story, don't we? She's someone who has interest in Joseph. She thinks he's handsome and good-looking, and she's, you know, a cougar on the prowl. And so she's going to go after him, and she goes after him strong. You know, not just some, you know, shy innuendo or something like that. I mean, she came at him full bore. And she didn't let up. And you got to give credit to Joseph. He withstood the temptation. He was someone who did not go into that temptation. He resisted her. In fact, I want you to notice what he says to her and how he does this. It says in Genesis 39, verse 8, but he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. He made the point, a very wise choice, to put himself as far away from the temptation as he could. Now, there's another side point and lesson altogether. That's not what I'm going to focus on this morning. What I am going to focus on in general is his commitment to do the right thing, to be his best, to make the best of a difficult situation that he did not choose himself, out of a core belief that God was with him, and that he wanted to honor God. And you notice, as he is speaking to her, he doesn't say, you know, if I did this, we might get caught. Or, you know, I'd really like to do this, maybe we can some other time. It's all about God. And it's all about understanding who God is, and who he is in light of who that God is who's called him. I know what some of you are thinking right now. You're thinking, you know, that wasn't me last week. I blew it. I said things to my wife or my husband I shouldn't have said. I did things. I was tempted. I gave in. I shouldn't have done that. I made some choices. You're thinking last week that are not like these choices. And let me just encourage you that a whole part of this whole series is to remind us is that we can reboot, we can have do-overs, we can have second chances, sometimes third chances or more. When Peter says, "How often shall I forgive my brother who sinned against me? Seven times." You remember what Jesus said to him. And it's not to make an excuse for irresponsible attitudes or behavior. It's just reality. So as we look at a lesson like this, and you may not be in this place, get up, move forward, try again. Talk to people who can encourage you and support you and love you and help you. Because we all need it. We all need it. And so we know what happens to Joseph. He's falsely accused by this woman. He winds up in prison. It's like a roller coaster, isn't it? It's like a soap opera. And yet, he maintains a steadfast attitude. You don't find him questioning God in terms of what his situation is, because I truly believe that one of the key things in terms of what he was doing here, he was always aware of the presence of God and believing that he was working. So it says in chapter 39, in the middle of verse 20, "But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. And he showed him kindness, and once again he raises to a position of prominence right there within the prison." But as we go along, we can't always control the circumstances, but we can try to bloom where we're planted. The same goes true for us here at Northeast, the church, right here or in other places. It's challenging to do church nowadays. We face more challenges now, in different challenges than we did 20 or 30 years ago. The world is a different place. People have different attitudes. But I am certainly not one who has the attitude, "Well, because things are a little bit more challenging or difficult or because of this circumstance, I'm just going to throw up my hands and there's nothing we can do." I don't believe that. And I have a series coming up. And it's entitled, "Who Needs the Church?" It's coming up in a couple of weeks. And hopefully I'll encourage us, you, me, to understand that this world does need the church. The world, this city, needs us. And we can bloom where he's planted us. Okay, the last takeaway is this. And that is, let's do our best to keep faith in God. Do your best to keep faith in God, even when the path does not seem clear or you're having to wait. Now, that was the whole life of Joseph. And we know what happened. He's in prison, and there's a couple of guys in there that worked for the Pharaoh, and they had some dreams, and then Joseph says, "Hey, I can interpret dreams." And then they said, "What do these dreams mean?" And to the baker, well, it meant he was dead after 3 days. To the butler, the cupbearer, the woman who was a personal butler to Pharaoh, it meant that he was going to be released. And Joseph said to him, "Just do me this little favor, little favor. When you get out, would you put in a good word to Pharaoh for me?" That's not much to ask, is it? And so we're told that the butler goes back to the home, and 2 years pass. 2 years. Until Pharaoh begins having dreams and not knowing what those dreams meant. And finally, the butler, the cupbearer, says, Oh, I remember a guy named Joseph. He can interpret dreams. And then within the span of about 24 hours from when he's in prison, he's in a position to eventually hold the place in the government where he is in charge basically of everything underneath the Pharaoh. But listen, it didn't happen overnight. I mean, he waits 13 years from that first reboot to go through what he went through in prison to be released from there. And then he has to go through another period of years before he comes face to face with his brothers. And so I'm not going to spend very much time with that this morning. I'd like to, but I'm not. Most of us know the story. If you don't, I encourage you to read Genesis 37 through Genesis 50 this week. And just look how God's working in this situation. But you wonder, how's he going to respond when he finally comes face to face with his brothers, whom Jacob sent, because they were starving? And the story comes full circle, doesn't it? What are they doing when they come to him? God had that plan. It wasn't maybe the way Joseph conceived it, but there was that plan. And he brought it about. And Joseph, although he in some ways plays around with them a little bit, I don't think he's doing it out of spite. I think he's trying to make them think about some things before he finally reveals himself to them. He's emotional. He's crying. There's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of stuff going on. What's he thinking about during all this time? 20 years separated from his family. Doesn't know if his dad's living or dead or what happened to his brother or brothers. But I know in the final outcome, what he doesn't do is he doesn't say, well. Who do we see here? You know, I have some nice accommodations for you here in Egypt. We have some nice comfortable pits that we'd like to throw you into these pits and keep you there for an undetermined period of time. No, he's willing to forgive. Because I believe God's been working on his heart. And he has gotten to this place, but it's not always about when we wait for something. It's not always about getting what we're waiting for. It's about the work that God is doing in us while we're getting there. And God's been working on him. And he says to his brothers ultimately, listen, you meant this for harm, but I'll tell you, God did this for good. He did this to save you. He did it to save lives. And he did it, listen, ultimately, to preserve a nation through whom your and my Savior came. God meant it for good. God's at work in your life. And there might be some roadblocks and detours along the way. The GPS may blow up. But he's there and he's with you. And the nice thing is, when we're uncertain and we're concerned about the future and I don't know what's going to happen, what's my next step, I can be sure that when I lay my head and you lay your head down on your pillow tonight, God's still working the night shift. He doesn't go to sleep. Have you found your place in his plans? Let's expect the unexpected. Let's bloom where we're planted. And let's trust God always, even when the path is not clear, because he comes through. If you need to respond to him in any way, to be baptized or want us to pray with you, we are eager to do so. And let us know as we sing.